Willow Valley Communities recognizes the need for a national conversation about the Vietnam War and is proud to support the efforts to preserve the memories of those who lived through it. More information is available at willowvalleycommunities.org. The law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein and Lehr, who are proud to partner with WITF in preserving our history to enable future generations to explore the past, understand the present, and create the future. Saul Ewing is online at saul.com.
Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing healthcare coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by Pinnacle Health Spine Institute, offering a complete range of services to diagnose and treat your spine condition. More information is available at pinnaclehealth.org/spine.
Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today is Mark Boughton, who is the author of Hue 1968. It's his latest book. You probably recognize Mark Boughton from his time as a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer and also his best-selling book that became a great film as well, Black Hawk Down. And I should mention Mark Boughton will be at the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, this Saturday from 4 to 6, talking about Hue 1968. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that's 1-800-729-7532. So going back to Hue and the block-to-block fighting at the time, as you write in the book, Marines had not been trained for this for the most part. And when many of us think about fighting in Vietnam, it almost always was in a rural area or a jungle. Very little urban fighting until the end when, you know, Saigon came under attack. But they were not trained for this, were they?
No, they weren't. And it really is a different kind of fighting. I think in the field, generally what they encountered were small bands of enemy forces who would often melt away when they were discovered. And so you had a lot of kind of flashpoints, but very few major battles. In Hue, you have a terrain where the enemy is basically shooting at you from all directions. And because of all the large buildings and concrete, sound echoed all over, you could never quite tell where you were being attacked from. And, of course, anywhere you moved, you were a target inside of Hue. So it was an experience that the Marines hadn't had since the Korean War when they fought in Seoul. So there were very few Marines, let's put it that way, in Vietnam who had any memory of fighting in a city.
When you just said that the Marines, whenever they move, they would be shot at, the book does just a fantastic job of describing that literally, that, I mean, these Marines were scared out of their wits because they didn't know where the enemy was at first. And you're right, whenever they would move, they would be shot at or, you know, they were in danger the entire time. I mean, your book leaves the reader on edge, right on the edge of your seat constantly, if I could use a cliche, because you never know when the next shot is going to come.
That's right. You know, that was a terrifying world to be fighting in, and it's just an unbelievable tribute to the courage of those men that they kept going every day, even as they were being shot to pieces. Most of the men that I interviewed who fought in Hue fought up until a certain point and were carried off of the battlefield. 1,000 or more were wounded, and 250 were killed. So it wasn't at all unusual that I'd be interviewing someone and they'd be telling me about their experiences, and then all of a sudden they say, and that was it for me. I was out on the next helicopter.
Mm. But one of the most unique aspects of your book that I found anyway is that this is nonfiction. These are real people you're talking about, so it's wrong to call them characters. But as you're reading the book and you introduce us to so many people, you describe their backgrounds, these are people that we probably all can relate to back here in the States, that you get to like them as characters, and they end up getting shot or they end up getting killed.
Yeah, and of course that's the nature of combat, and it is why it's so terrifying and terrible. And I think, you know, my goal as a writer is to immerse the reader in the experience so that you really understand what the people who fought in Hue went through. And both, you know, from the American side and the Vietnamese side, one of the things that I was proudest of in the book is the reporting in Vietnam itself. I do think it's the first book of this kind that tells the story of a battle in Vietnam through the eyes of both the Americans and the Vietnamese.
Talk about the North Vietnamese, the Viet Cong, that you did talk to, the former members of the Army or the guerrilla outfit. How did they see the Battle of Hue?
Well, they, of course, they varied because you had everything from, you know, Che Ti Mung, an 18-year-old village girl who had joined the Viet Cong after her older sister was killed, to veteran North Vietnamese Army soldiers who were, you know, doing their duty. For the most part, you know, they were fighting for the independence of their country, and they tended to see the United States as just the latest foreign invader. And, you know, I think a lot of the younger, more idealistic fighters believed the propaganda that this would be the final battle of the war and that the people in the city of Hue would rise up in support of their efforts. And so they were, you know, deeply disillusioned and discouraged when that didn't happen, and then when the American and South Vietnamese counterattack began pummeling.
So if you would provide us a brief description of how the battle itself transpired as far as fighting block to block, fighting house to house. I mean, when it was being reported at the time back here in the United States in the media, which, by the way, you talk about a lot of how it is being covered back by the American media. But, you know, we're talking about a half block per day, maybe a block per day if we're lucky, and that only came at the end. I mean, this is just hard to believe, the courage of these Marines and what they had to go through to fight for as much as they did.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's possible for reporters on the scene to really fully understand the scope of what they're writing about or the pattern of the battle. But, you know, I have the advantage of looking back on it from almost 50 years. And really what the Battle of Hue was three separate battles. There was the effort to take back the southern part of the city, the modern part of the city, which, as you described, was basically moving block to block, house to house, until they fought their way through the center of southern Hue. And then after that concluded, they had to go fight inside that old fortress, which was, if anything, even more horrifying because, I mean, just to look at it is pretty daunting when you see this big fortress. It looks like something out of medieval times. But they were, you know, fighting in a situation there where the enemy was up on the walls overhead and shooting down at them and in buildings inside of the citadel. And that was a particularly horrific fight that lasted for another week or two. And then there was a third battle that was fought in the countryside northwest of the city where the army, where the 1st Cavalry Unit fought its way down in order to try to cut off the supply lines and the avenues of retreat for the enemy. And those were some major battles, and the Americans took a lot of casualties there as well.
The United States had a real advantage in air power. Why was there no air support or artillery? I mean, there was some artillery, but that didn't come till later, and it was only used sparingly.
Yeah, it was actually used intensely at the end of the battle. Initially, part of the problem with using artillery is that the fighting was close in a city, so it was difficult to figure out where your troops were and where the enemy troops were, and in most cases, they were sometimes just across the street from each other. So it was very difficult to use heavy artillery without killing your own men. There was also concern, particularly in the beginning of the battle, for destroying a lot of the historical treasures. As I mentioned, Hue is the ancient capital of Vietnam, and there are a lot of pagodas and historical buildings. And it, at least in the beginning, and I think this reflected some of the arrogance and disbelief, since, you know, the American forces didn't believe that the enemy was there in such great numbers, they probably felt they didn't need heavy artillery as much in the beginning, and also it was difficult to use. Air power was restricted because in Hue, and as in most of Vietnam during the months of January and February, there's a rainy season and the clouds are very low. Every day is misty and gray, and so the visibility from aircraft was practically nil whenever they had the opportunity, especially later in the battle, to get in an aircraft, they used them where they could. They even dropped napalm in the city. But and I should add, to devastating effect, because they killed many more civilians died inside the city of Hue than combatants.
And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Let's take a phone call from John in Lebanon. John, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
Like so many of us of our generation, I've always been fascinated with the subject. But years ago, I came across the best account. It's a sweeping account, but the best account of the Vietnam War I've ever read. And I'm curious if you've used any of it as a resource for your own book, Mr. Bowden. The book I'm speaking of is Neil Sheehan's account. I think it won the Pulitzer Prize. It was an account of the life of John Paul Vann, who was a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army, who served in Vietnam and then served in the Army, but also then as a civilian. He was eventually killed in a helicopter crash, I believe, in Vietnam. The name of the book is A Bright Shining Lie.
Hey, thank you very much for your call. What about that, Mark?
Yes, Bright and Shining Lie by Neil Sheehan is one of the great books about Vietnam, and it is just as the caller described. I think when you read about the story of John Paul Vann, you understand the level of intelligence and professionalism and effort that went into the American effort to win the war. But what you gather from John Paul Vann is his growing frustration with the tactics that are being employed in Vietnam and his realization fairly early on that the American effort was not likely to succeed.
Mm. You talked earlier about, described the block, and then eventually the second and third parts of the Battle of Hue. When we're talking about individuals that you introduce in the book, they used a lot of ingenuity. A lot of these troops, the Marines, used ingenuity, but one in particular that it seemed to, I don't know if I'd say a turning point in the war, but they kind of found a different way to fight in Hue. And that is, you had someone who found some gas. They would shoot tear gas into where the enemy was, follow up with, and there are some weapons, I have to admit, that I'm not very familiar with. Talk about that. And what they would do is they'd blow open holes in the wall, and then the Marines would follow through wearing their gas mask in these holes in the wall. They used a lot of ingenuity.
Yeah, I think, the person responsible for the part of the story that you're talking about is Lieutenant Colonel Ernie Cheatham, who's a fascinating character. He's a former NFL football player who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Colts, and he was the commander of a battalion that was sent into Hue, and he didn't arrive until the third or fourth day. And so I think, Cheatham stands as a fairly nice counterpoint to General Westmoreland. We've already talked about how General Westmoreland kind of believed he knew everything he needed to know. Cheatham, on the other hand, understood that he did not know how to fight in a city like Hue. And he actually spent the night before he came into the city finding old Marine Corps manuals for how to assault a fortified position. And what he learned was that he needed to, use the heaviest portable weaponry he could find in order to poke holes in the walls of fortified structures and then pump tear gas into them and essentially to reduce or make the enemy flee before he would send the Marines in. And it was only on Colonel Cheatham's arrival that the Marines started to really make progress.
Mm. That weapon with the six barrels, what is that?
It's called the Ontos. It's a Greek word meaning the thing. It's a really ungainly looking small tank with six very large recoilless rifles, which look like cannons mounted on it. It was designed by the Army initially as an anti-tank weapon, and it had a lot of defects. One of the problems was that the crew had to climb out of it in order to reload the guns and to add fuel. And that made it very vulnerable in fighting in the open field. But the Marines sort of inherited these things, and they found them extremely useful for urban fighting because those big cannons could blow holes in the walls of even the thickest stone buildings.
Mm. You had touched on this a little bit earlier, but civilians, there were thousands, and by the way, we don't know the exact numbers, but there were thousands of civilians killed by the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong and the Marines as well. But let's start with the civilians killed by the North. What were they looking to do?
Well, part of the plan when they took over the city was to round up everyone who worked for or supported the Saigon government, and to ostensibly send them to re-education, or in some cases to execute them on the spot. I think, you know, that plan was carried out, and a lot of civilians were rounded up and executed right at the beginning. And then I think as it became clear that the citizenry of Hue was not rising up in support of the revolution, it generated a lot of anger and frustration, and I think that led to the point where these purges, you know, got out of control. So the count is as many as, you know, thousands, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 civilians were executed by the North Vietnamese troops.
Then on the other side, the Marines, you know, there were a lot of civilians who were killed by artillery that we had talked about earlier. But there were Marines who actually, even though they performed admirably and courageously, that shot civilians because they didn't know whether they were supporters of the North or they were South Vietnamese who supported the Allies. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, that was, you know, one of the real problems in Vietnam. I mean, you're sending young Americans who are 18, 19, 20 years old in the combat in a country populated by Asian people who speak another language, who have completely different culture. And, you know, and then, you know, these young Marines are being shot at, their friends are being killed, they're being wounded. This generates a great deal of fear and anger. And so there were plenty of young Americans who fought in Vietnam who began to see all Vietnamese as potentially a threat. And they, you know, they had their pet names for Vietnamese people, derogatory terms. So not all of the men fighting in Hue were terribly discriminating when it came to targets.
Mm. So who were the heroes of Hue?
Well, certainly it depends on which side you're on. You know, as far as the Vietnamese are concerned, the heroes were the outgunned Viet Cong and North Vietnamese who tenaciously hung on to the city for nearly a month and who demonstrated to the world that they were a force to be reckoned with, and they took enormous casualties. And I think in the end, you know, Vietnam won the war. The North Vietnamese won the war. So, you know, you have to, I guess, count them through Vietnamese eyes as heroes. On the American side, you know, there were lots of heroes. I mean, these young Marines who fought so courageously day in and day out, who sacrificed everything in many cases, and, you know, who were, I think, genuinely terrified, but who nevertheless got up every morning and continued to push forward. You know, I'm in awe, frankly, of the courage that they displayed. And I think also, you know, there were South Vietnamese Army troops who fought very bravely in Hue, particularly inside the Citadel, where I think they did the bulk of the fighting. And, you know, they're very unheralded because that's obviously a defeated army that disbanded, and it was very difficult for me to find as many of them to interview as I would have liked.
What about villains?
Oh, the villains, I think number one would have to be the Viet Cong cadre leaders, the commissars who were responsible for executing people. That was just a deliberate exercise, and it was murderous. I think that on the American side, the villain would have to be ignorance and arrogance. And that was kind of personified by General Westmoreland, who I think was responsible for a lot of young Americans being killed.
So what are some of the lessons that the United States did learn from Hue in 1968?
Well, I think the Marine Corps certainly became a lot more efficient at urban fighting. And nowadays, much of the combat that our troops engage in around the world is in cities, just by virtue of the fact that most people in the world now live in cities. I think on a larger level, I think the United States, you know, might have learned from Vietnam the danger of underestimating people like the Vietnamese, and also the danger of projecting kind of our national politics, which in in the 1950s and 60s were obsessed with stopping the spread of communism and projecting this rather simplistic notion of what was going on a country like Vietnam, which had its own history and its own culture. And the battles that were going on in Vietnam were a lot more complicated than a simple struggle of the free world versus communism.
You know, we hear often that the Tet Offensive was a military victory for the United States, but it was the beginning of the end for how we lost the war. You don't necessarily agree with that, do you?
No, I don't think. I mean, for the war as a whole, the goal of the United States military was to protect and preserve the government of South Vietnam and to establish it safely, and that failed. So I don't see how anyone can call the war in Vietnam a military victory. And nor do I think, as many people try to blame press coverage of the war and the public's turning against the war on the ultimate failure, I think that, in fact, if you look, as I did, very closely at the Battle of Hue, the accounts by journalists who were there were far more accurate than the official accounts of what were going on. And I do think that those reports changed American public opinion, but that wasn't because journalists were making up false stories about what was going on there. They were telling the truth. And I think what changed the public's mind about the war was the truth.
And those who would point to it being a military victory for the United States in South Vietnam, look at the numbers, which Westmoreland did throughout the war. As far as the numbers go, you know, we can't get an accurate count, but how many enemy soldiers were killed, South Vietnamese, civilians, and Americans?
In the whole war or just in Hue?
No, just in Hue.
In Hue, there were 250 Americans killed, both Marines and soldiers, Army soldiers. There were probably 3,000 to 4,000 South Vietnamese military killed, and there were estimates of 5,000 to 6,000 North Vietnamese Army and Viet Cong killed. And I would say there were probably, most estimates are close to 6,000. I think it's probably greater than that. Civilians were killed. So it's hard to come up with an overall figure. I mean, I estimated 10,000, which is a very, very conservative estimate. And even by that count, the Battle of Hue was the bloodiest battle that was fought in the Vietnam War.
The book is Hue, 1968. Mark Bowden is the author. Mr. Bowden, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure, Scott.
Mark Bowden will be at Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg this Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Willow Valley Communities recognizes the need for a national conversation about the Vietnam War and is proud to support the efforts to preserve the memories of those who lived through it. More information is available at willowvalleycommunities.org. The law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein, and Lehr, who are proud to partner with WITF in preserving our history to enable future generations to explore the past, understand the present, and create the future. Saul Ewing is online at saul.com.